Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 167, coming to you live from three locations tonight. Both our three co-hosts, myself, Stephen Zimmer from Lexington, Kentucky, from Tennessee, Daniel Dark, and from Indianapolis, the one and only Michael West, Land of Werewolves and forthcoming audiobooks. Good evening, guys. How's it going?
It is going.
It's going all right.
And Michael is right on the verge. We any day now through ACX, we will have his first full audiobook coming out for Cinema of Shadows. So that's one thing that is very cool. So right now we're kind of on the watch waiting for that to go live because that's past the inspection and been approved and all that good stuff. And I know Michael's probably got special software tracking it every second.
It's called the refresh button.
Right. That's manual though. Yeah. Surely you've got it like automated. Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, you're
auto
a busy
refresh,
man.
Auto refresh.
Yeah. I know that goes, but I know Michael, yeah, he's up to something though, which I'll let him talk about it. But I know that he's reached out to a certain cover artist, and some things are underway. So Michael, you gotta give us some updates before we get into some of the rest of the news here.
All right. Well, those of you out there who are fans of my Legacy of the Gods series and have those long suffering fans. We moved several major steps closer this week. My editor with Seven Star Press has roughly I can't say exactly how much it is because the book's not done yet, but roughly about half of the book. And she is professionally editing the first half of the book. In addition, we have begun talks on what the cover art will look like, and so I'm excited about that. So hopefully we'll have a cover reveal here before too long, and the work continues. So
yes, keep appetites wet during the summer for the Michael West, I would say, yeah, West World, but I guess that's already kind of taken up by some other people,
yeah.
But the world of Michael West,
it's going to be quite a time here the rest of the year because we've got audiobook, as you said, ready to go any day now for Cinema of Shadows, and then we have another audiobook in production for The Legacy of the Gods, Book 1, Poseidon's Children. So that should be hitting. We still have a few copies of the hardcover edition of Legacy of the Gods, Book 3, Zeus's Warriors, which you can get through the Seven Star Press website. And then the Legacy of the Gods, Book 4, the grand finale, Cronus's Return, should be out here this fall as well. So all kinds of stuff going on.
Michael's Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the four books of the Legacy of the Gods series. Yes, definitely want to get that. So, I have to say that your concept for the cover art is going to be amazing. So I can't wait to see that come to life here. And
yeah,
Michael,
his
Michael's sketch work is himself pretty soon.
Well, when I was in high school, I won
too.
Several.
Is a new book going to be another one of the Westward Ho books?
That's his first. That'll be his new erotica. That's the new Michael West erotica imprint that we do.
Well,
Westward Ho.
there are two. Let's put it this way. So far, there are two scenes in this final book. One of them has been called one of the hottest things that I've ever done. The other has been called one of the wildest things I've ever done, like crazy. So
nice. Well, you do
so,
know, Michael, that's actually one of the funniest things I get is that I'm not joking. Holly can back us up. We talk to readers, you know, when we're out and about or chatting online or whatever, and they'll say, you do know Michael West, you know, he has a talent for writing erotica if he ever goes into that. So, yeah, you already got a reputation for this, just out of your non-erotica books. So,
because I finished this last scene, and I was actually reading it to my son, of all people. his one comment was, it sounds good, he's only read, like, the first book. So he says, I have no idea who these characters are, but it sounds great.
Oh, that's awesome.
I figured it was going to be, Dad, I don't want to hear you reading that to me.
Well, that was my youngest son. Like, I wrote my oldest son into listening, but my youngest son was like, no.
That's awesome. Oh, my God. Well, gentlemen, I do have some cool Imaginarium news to share with both of you. It's been fast breaking, but we have a new director of cosplay. So, this will be a great environment for people cosplaying all of your works, of course, now, getting even better. His name's Jonathan Peacock, and he is phenomenal. And he is, he's a very avid cosplayer, very well known in the region. And he is a big part of the Ghostbusters cosplay group here. And, I'm happy to say that the Ghostbusters will be coming to Imaginarium, and as well as we have several other cosplay groups we are going to announce shortly. I know the Kentucky Brown Coats for you Firefly and Serenity fans. This is just working fast. I mean, it's amazing. There's a lot of excitement. Actually, kind of catapulted out of our good attendance at the costume contest last year, and it's kind of vaulted out of there, and they, you know, really want to make that a nice little cosplay scene there at Imaginarium. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lot of we're going to be doing some extra charity activities, and there'll be several groups that are going to be formally announced soon. But yeah, I can say now, you know, the Kentucky Brown Coats, WKGB, the Kentucky Ghostbusters group here, is going to be coming aboard, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we are pumped about that addition. Everything that, you know, like I said, makes the atmosphere that much better. A lot of the folks involved are themselves creative. Some of them are filmmakers, gamers, gaming people. I mean, they're book people. They are, you know, some of them are writers. I mean, so it's a lot of the people that are part of these, you know, very known cosplay groups are themselves creative. So it's going to be a nice kind of cross-pollination, as I call it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And
are we having any of the airships show up?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. I just want to make sure I get all the details in place before we formally announce that. But yes, that group is also coming. And so I just want to make sure I don't botch anything while I'm on the air here. I want to make sure I get it all right. But the other two I can speak with, like I said, I got the more details on them. So that's going to be a lot
very
of fun.
Good.
And Thomas Moore is hanging out in the chat room, so he's an early member of the chat. Yeah, please do log in. Use your email on the show page. Great place to hang out and have some fun. We do take comments and questions from there, and that's awesome. But yeah, the cosplay side of things, that was very good news. And then two, from the press side of things, we're gearing up on the 12th for the release of the third City Quartet book from Michael Williams, Trajan's Arch. It's actually got some new sections reworked. So this is a true, you know, new edition actually of Trajan's Arch from the previous release, and this will put it right on the cusp of getting the full quartet out, and that's pretty exciting for Michael, I know, and our other Michael has got Michael's like a couple of Michaels tearing it up out there in the literary world, but yeah, this is Michael Williams, and that's a new bit of news we have. So next Wednesday we'll be celebrating that a little bit too. So. Anyway, I do want to get in. We got a great guest tonight, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of good discussion going on, and like to shake things up and get different kinds of writers in. And so tonight we've, like I said, we always mixing it up. So just wait a couple more minutes, and we'll be getting our guests on. But I do want to recognize this week's sponsors, because certainly definitely make a huge difference in putting on our show and our operation for the show. And this week, Lender and Marianne Pohl. So take a minute and give them some of our attention and definitely from our end, our gratitude. Fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. The TimelessTeens.com went nuts for the critters in her Dragons and Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. Again, check out Sandy Lender on Amazon.com. And she's an absolutely fantastic writer. I can tell you that. And now, let's take a moment and hear a little bit about Marianne. Raven's Cove, a town coveted by a sinister enemy, where a frightening legend holds the key to survival. Murder heralds the advancing darkness. A battle will rage. To lose means destruction of the body, annihilation of the soul, and an end to Raven's Cove. Available on Amazon at www.author.marianpohl.com, and where all good books are sold. Again, that web address on Amazon is www.author.marianpohl, and that's MarianPohl.com, and where all good books are sold. Yeah, check that one out. That is an amazing supernatural thriller. Great book, definitely one that's raising a lot of more attention out there in among readers. So check that out, Marianne Pohl. Thank you very much to both of them for sponsoring the Star Chamber show. So, yes, like I said, Daniel, it's been crazy. You know, we've been definitely keeping at it on all fronts here. But before we get underway tonight, though, I definitely, of course, want to give you time to give us updates if you've got some. From your end,
well, as most people that follow me know, I was at the Middle Tennessee Authors Fair this weekend and doing panels and stuff there with about 48 other authors. We had 11 panels and at least like 4 people on per panel, and that was it was the second time that it's been done, but it was. The last one was done several years back, and we're thinking about keeping it as an annual thing now, because it was so well received and everything in the community. And beyond that and everything, just trying to get 2 more books written for these crazy people that think that I write good. And
well, I know your beta readers have been working hard looking over your material. So one of them happens to live very close to me. So, yeah, I know they've been...
At least my, pseudo editor, yeah. I did get through her stuff this weekend while I was sitting there at the author's fair and got things approved and stuff for that.
Very nice.
It took me a while because I'm still not used to doing all that. So I'm sitting there trying to get it done, and I'm like, okay, how do I get this one to accept or?
Oh yes, the wonderful world of track edits. Yes, no. But yeah, I've heard good things.
If I was a better writer, it wouldn't be all red.
Right. I've not interrupted. I've not delved into it, but I've heard good things. So it's been positive. So that's the good news. So I've certainly been. I can't wait to check it out. It's gonna be a real treat.
Well, considering that we can send in a half a book and everything, yeah. The editors, which I didn't know that you could do that.
It used to be that I would only send in the books when they were done, but what got to happen was that I would send in the book when it was done, and then it's a hurry up and wait scenario. What we worked out a kind of a rhythm that we do where I do a big section, get it to her. She edits it while I write the next section. And then by the time she's done, hopefully I'm done with a new section for her. And then it's constantly moving forward. So by the time everything's done and it's just ready to go out there.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds wonderful and everything.
But every writer has a different process, and this works for Michael.
We're going to try some of that.
Readers, they like it. So it's we try to accommodate, but it does work. It's not the one that everybody follows the same process, but it does work. It does work for Michael. But we are going to have some fun here. We're going to bring in our guest here in just a second. And this is a guest that comes from the freelance business writing world, and he specializes in the technology and training industries. And he's been published in online and print, including Training Magazine, Training Data with Intelligence's Upside Publication, and EdSurge. And among the cool things is he does like whiskey and cigars, and I know that's definitely going to make him a hit on our show tonight. I'm speaking to you of the one and only from South Carolina, Scott McKinney. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Is the sound coming across clear? Or yes.
There you are. Yeah, welcome.
Yeah.
Fill up that glass of whiskey and pull up a seat and join us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. And yourself?
Yeah, doing great. Yeah, tonight you drew the short straw, and you have the three of us. You miss out on, of course, the lovely Holly Phillippe. You just get the three guys tonight, but you'll you'll make it, I promise.
You got the cigar smoker, you got the bourbon swigger, and then you got
right.
Mr. Hale.
Well, yeah. Michael,
you got to figure out which one's which.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's an honor.
Holly was really excited when she met you and got you booked for the show. And we like to have on our show creatives that different spheres of writing. And your area of creativity is people, when we say okay, business writing, but that's a very creative world in itself. And then also the concepts that you deal with, and I think it's amazing. You speak Mandarin even. That's incredible. But the fact that you work in things that will apply across the board to all the creatives listening tonight. I mean, yeah, we, that definitely helps us whenever we can get some good business sense. So, looking forward to diving into it a little bit with you. But go ahead and tell us a little bit about life as how you got into freelance business writing. What was your path and and what is it like, as a professional in that field?
Well, I come from a background as a mathematics educator. I taught math for about 10 years in a high school and university, including overseas in China for a couple of years. And I kind of decided I wanted to do something else, something more in the world, like in the business world. But I wasn't quite sure what I could do, so I kept looking around. I thought of working in the stock market or I don't know, I tried looking at different things, and then I stumbled across this freelance writing world, which these businesses, they're selling a product that maybe the product costs $100,000 or even up to several million dollars, and for a sale like that, they can't just show up and sell it. They need a lot of content, a lot of written content, information to help in the sales process. So when I read about that, and I saw that that's a, I mean, it's an interesting work. It takes technical skills, or I've got a math background, but it's also talking to people, interviewing people, and getting to see kind of in the.
Yeah. And you've got a teaching background too. I mean, I was reading that you, had gotten a recognition out of 3,000 tutors, I believe, as a, you won an award, I think, and you can expound on that. But you definitely also come from a teaching kind of protocol as well. So, in addition to technical information and skill sets, you also are used to, communicating that in an effective manner. So. That's I think, did we lose him? I think we may have just lost our guest. And I had a good question there, Daniel. Call back.
I did too,
back.
But, you know.
No panic. We'll give him a chance to call back. He'll be calling back in a second, hopefully, here. He gets cut off, I'm sure. This is the fun of live broadcasting. There's always a little surprise that jumps out at you. But he's back. He was quick. There he is.
Sorry, my acting up. If that happens again, I'm going to have to run over to a cafe next door. I don't.
You're fine. We have had so many adventures doing live broadcasting. I mean, the guys can tell you. I mean, we've had our chat room go down. We've had, like I said, once a caller completely could not connect with us, and we had to basically improv the whole show. And so, don't worry. I mean, we're used to the hazards of live broadcasting. But just to rephrase the question, though, you also have a teaching element in your approach to things, and you won, and I wanted you to talk about that. It was impressive. 3,000 tutors, you won an award, and that is a part of your world, teaching, tutoring, and that melds in with your business content and communication. So, you got a little teaching stuff.
That award was out of 3,000 across U.S. and Canada, and they said the students gave me good feedback. I just learned how to communicate with the students after several thousand, I guess, tutoring sessions. So that was for online tutoring, I was given that award, I guess a lot of people think in tutoring they like when they're tutoring they immediately start talking to the student, but it's really important to actually get the student talking and like learn to question them, to kind of get in their head and see how they're thinking about their homework or what they're studying. So, and that's a skill that comes in handy with the business writing too, because I have to be very curious and question the experts that I'm interviewing, or I have to sort of get in their head and kind of come at it as a curious child. So it's sort of the same thing, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Like, yeah.
And I think Daniel was wanting to ask you something while you were off the air.
When you're teaching math and everything to these other countries and everything, do you use an abacus or, what they're used to using it originally?
No, they would use just a calculator, just like probably the same calculator as in the U.S. So, the ones that the students in China, they almost don't need a calculator. They're pretty amazing at rote calculations, or like they can multiply two numbers. So those Chinese students, they're that real calculation,
I've talked to a few of them and everything over here, and they are amazing, some of the things that they actually know over what our students here know. You know, you talk to a young American student, most of them can't hold a conversation with you. And, you know, I talked to some of them that were from China here this last few months and everything. They were at a park and they had a whole group of them that came from China. Some of them couldn't speak any English, but the ones that could were amazing.
They were there on a study abroad trip, or?
Yeah, there was a school trip, or where the like almost like exchange students, but it was just for a certain period of time where they came over here for like a trip to go all the way across America, and Tennessee was part of where they stopped at different, trying to learn different things, and they were trying to learn about American Indians and stuff, and they are having a demonstration by one of the American Indians here at one of the parks.
Interesting.
So.
All right. You got to talk with them pretty in depth there.
Yeah, there was a few of them that I got to talk to for quite a while and everything, and they, you know, they could literally, you know, sit down and talk to you about just about anything that you came up with. And they were all like junior high and high school students.
Interesting. Did they tell you their impression of the U.S. or like how they think about America, or?
I didn't really ask them that because I was afraid of what the answer might be. But they, you know, they were enjoying themselves. That's the one thing that I did notice is, you know, it was a group of probably 75 to 125 kids there. And, you know, they were enthralled with me, especially being a writer and stuff like that. And then, you know, the guy that was doing the Indian talk to him and everything, teaching him some things about the tribes and stuff like that that were in the Central South America, you know, before, and teaching him some of a little bit of the language, a little bit of different things like that, and they all seemed to be having a good time and everything, but there were certain ones that were actually translators in the group. That like if somebody didn't understand something, they would translate it to that student.
Yeah, caught the back half of your story there, Daniel, because guess what? The curse struck me. As soon as Scott got kicked off, I actually got kicked off. So I was off for a second there. But I'm resilient too, so I'm back. But I missed the first half of that story, but so I unfortunately. But so where do you want to take the conversation as far as
I'm curious. I understand that you went to a lecture from Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh yes.
And you actually got to ask him a question. And what was your question?
Oh, it was the lecture was about astrobiology, about, you know, about possible life in the universe, and I can't remember the exact question it was, but you know, it was kind of something I heard in the middle and was curious about, so I went up and I asked him, and he said it was an excellent question, so
did he ever answer the question?
Yes, he answered the question. Yes, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
yes.
I didn't know whether that's an excellent question. Next.
Yeah.
All right.
Like you stumped him real good. And yes, that's a great question. But hey, it's another one in the back there. But no, I saw that too. Yeah, that was very, very cool. Yeah, very cool for sure. And
there's a joke. Oh, sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
There's a joke. If you ask a professor, how many professors does it take to change a light bulb? Excellent question. All right.
Right. Well, I grew up around the academia world because my dad was a PhD in cancer research microbiology, and he taught at UK and research there. So yeah, most professor jokes I will definitely be able to get because I spent my whole life around that side of things. So, but
he was so thrilled when you told him, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to be a writer for a living."
He did a good job of being supportive and acting like he was excited about it, but I don't know, maybe there's another level to it. I think if he saw how the market has turned out, I think he might be a little different now, the way the book market's gone. And how is, and that brings me, yeah, that is a good, yeah, it brings me to it. The book market right now is so oversaturated. So a lot of, creative writers, authors and all have a lot of difficulty with what I call the white noise. And that's, getting your work seen, heard on the radar just because of the sheer volume of material and stuff out there. Now you, you often talk about marketing and that's one of your spheres of expertise. What are your thoughts about the current publishing market and how authors can get, get noticed, market more effectively in this kind of climate?
Well, I have to preface this by saying I'm in a little bit of a different field because for business writing, it's like the whole point is to sell the actual product the business is making. So they've got, they're selling maybe a 6 or 7 figure software suite. So they've got money to put behind the marketing effort for that. So it's, I think it's probably a lot more lucrative than the business side, overall in terms of the overall amount of money that's there for writers with the needed skill set. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Definitely.
Right.
We definitely deal with a much more limited resource kind of situation. I know that certain at least concepts apply the same across the board. When you're marketing something, a product, whether it's books or whatever. But what kind of marketing techniques do you deal with primarily as far as that you would recommend to our world maybe?
Well, I've got I know a couple of examples of fiction authors I know that they've kind of done a creative they've gotten a creative way of marketing their books. One, his name is Richard Armstrong. He just published a book called The Don Con. And he published a previous one. The name slipped my mind, but he actually sold it as a screen. He was able to sell it with a screenplay. But what he did for marketing both of the books is, for example, for the second book, The Don Con, the storyline is it's this author that goes to conventions and he sells his books and. Like he goes, it's the Don Con, or he goes to the conventions and sells the books. And at one of the conventions, at all of the conventions, he ends up taking away maybe $7,000 or $10,000 because he's signing these books. And he's approached at one of them by a mafia don who tries to recruit him to, or he intimidates him into taking part in a death train, or just the mafia don decides to start robbing these celebrities that go to conventions to get autographs or to sell their autographs. But the plot turn is he decides instead of or the mafia don forced him to take part in this crime ring. He decides to con the mafia don back. So, but what the author did is he went into research how con artists actually work. So that was a key part of the research because he needed the character to actually carry out a con or a dangerous con, conning a mafia don out of his money. So, but what Richard Armstrong did is he took all the things he learned about being a con artist and he put them up into an ebook called, I think it's Persuasion Secrets of Con Artists or something to that effect. And he puts that on a website. And I can, if you go to the website, it's doncon.com. I think that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can download it as an ebook that it's kind of interesting. It's how do con artists actually persuade people to, effectively rob people without having to rob them. So what do con artists actually do? So he's got 44 tips for that. So he's using that kind of as an entryway in, or that's something that interests people. So they'll start request that ebook about the con artist techniques. And then if they buy the actual book, he gets two more little ebooks about other things he researched. So basically, he's taking things that he researched will be interesting to the end reader. They're not part of the fiction book. There's something he researched on the side as part of the book. So, so that's kind of his marketing strategy there. And he gets you have to opt into his email list. So he, I think he starts sending out other messages to, if you buy his book, he'll. He'll give you those other
wow.
PDFs that he made. But I thought that's a pretty creative strategy. And I know his first book he ended up selling it to Hollywood. So I think he mm-hmm. made a good amount of money off that book. But with a similar strategy, does that make sense? Or
yeah, oh yeah, no, it makes great. Daniel, that is. I mean, that just rings a bell for you because you do so much research with the Victorian era with all of your mm-hmm. work there. And he's talking about, spinning off and making, writing nonfiction books based on, everything you've been researching for your fiction novels. And that, that is a cool segue. Daniel, I want to hear your thoughts on that. That's a cool idea.
Well, it sort of goes into, like, my Victorian cookbooks and stuff, too. Where I, I've got the ketchup book out right now. I've got other books that I would like to put out later on that. But, those are just, personal research and everything that I've done over the years. But then all the other stuff like, working with the White City, working with, New York and everything when, in the 1800s when, the pilgrimage of the Irish were coming in, different things like that, that would be an interesting take on being able to put some things together. Maybe not necessarily books, but papers and stuff on that could mm-hmm. be easy giveaways. For that,
yeah,
for people trying to do research.
Yep, and I tell you, Scott, Daniel can ride a mean penny father bike. It is impressive. He's definitely.
He may not know what a penny fathering bike is, so.
I don't know what it is. Yes.
Yeah.
You don't know what it is, do you?
No, I don't know what a penny falling bike is.
back in the 1800s, the ones that had the big front wheel and the little back wheel?
Oh, all right, all right.
That's nicknamed Benny Fothering or Velocipede, Bone Shaker.
Mm-hmm.
Has several different names for it. Most of them are, you know, incorrect. It's an ordinary bicycle is what it is. Prior to the safety bikes and the recumbents coming in, it's actually the ordinary bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can ride the, you know how to get up on those, or do you?
Yeah, I have one. It's
oh,
my,
you have one.
My
right.
normal play toy.
Yeah, if you were to...
I've
it is sitting about 5 feet away from me right now.
You
yeah, if you were to come to
Imaginarium,
you can ride it right on our showroom floor in the expo.
Cool.
Oh, it's fun. But that is a cool idea, though. That's a great marketing kind of... Yeah, because that's like the most out of the work you do. I mean, you're taking the research that you're doing for your book and then finding new ways to I guess, to use a term in today's world, monetize it and create, you know, I guess, new streams, of actually scalable streams of income out of the research. So, I mean, I think that's a cool thing to hear about. And I know Michael West is sitting in the background going, man, he sold how many, 7,000 to 10,000 bucks, in gross sales at a convention. Oh, that would be nice. Oh man.
I think I phrased it wrong.
What you're doing,
you're
basically segueing, somebody's interest into sales.
Yeah. That's true.
I think that's a key part of the strategy, is make sure if you can find something that will interest the end reader, that's, you know, that's separate from the book, but it's part of the work you did. I've got a second example. An author, Ben Settle. I think he'd make a good guest on your podcast, but he's at bensettle.com. But he's a he wrote a series of books called The Enoch Wars, which are about ancient, like these ancient, like demons or ghosts or vampires.
Nephilim
that,
or something like that.
The whole
right.
plot is that. The whole plot is about them. He's got a series of seven books. I think he'll probably be able to sell them to Hollywood or something. I think that's his end goal. But what he did for these was, as he was researching the books, like he's got one book called Zombie Cop, or it's about a zombie cop apocalypse in Oregon. But he did all this research about zombies. Or different zombie sightings or zombie stories from history. So as he was researching the book, he was posting like little interesting tidbits about like interesting zombie stories or interesting sort of wives' tales about zombies that he was coming up with. He was giving like factual stories from history, but it sort of stimulates interest in his books. He was posting. Facebook page, I know, and on I guess through Twitter, but that's kind
great.
Of a second example of that whole that strategy of just taking the research you're already doing for a fiction book and finding tidbits that will be interesting to the readers and sort of posting those out. Or you could probably make a strategy of sending that to newspapers or different publications where you're audience might be, so to help kind of get awareness about your book out. Does that
mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question? Out
yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's sort of what
fabulous.
Came to mind. That's marketing.
A great angle.
Book,
so. And I'm thinking about Michael West over here, and he's a walking encyclopedia when it comes to horror films and things like that. I mean, that's. I mean, you've got some nonfiction segues there, Michael. You need to start thinking about because you have a lot of areas you could even dive into some of that stuff. And I know I spend my life doing a lot of research as well. I'm gonna have to start brainstorming myself because that's cool. I mean, the idea of going developing some nonfiction titles, you know, based on the work you already are doing. That's awesome. Yeah, so that's a and two, the other thing is, and I know this applies to your world,
Stephen,
but nonfiction gets you into more places. Now, what's that, Michael?
I was going to say, Stephen, you could write a book about the whole production of the TV pilot that you went through.
Oh, yes, we could. It'd be comedy, horror, it's quite a cross-genre tale. It would. Oh, what he's referring to, Scott, is I made a independent TV pilot proof of concept project, and we did it completely on the independent level. So anytime you do one of those projects, you, it's an adventure, to say the least. But, yeah,
improvisation, you know.
What's that?
Write a book on improvisation too, you know. So.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you got to think on your feet when you're doing the film project. That's for sure. But what I was saying is, it's when you're doing like, and I know that applies a lot to the world of business to business and business speakers and all. I mean, you when you do come out with nonfiction titles, that opens you up to becoming a guest speaker at a lot more events where you actually can get paid to speak. And, you know, once you get some of those nonfiction kind of credentials and that's that opens up even more doors that I can see kind of coming out of this, kind of thing. Cause that's, I see a lot of value in kind of the scenarios you're talking about. And that's
well,
cool.
Like, you know,
that's
my,
cool.
My catch-up book has me going out doing, you know, demos and stuff like that at Historicums and stuff where, you know, it's just one of those type things where they want to meet, you know, after putting the book in the store, in their gift shop and everything, they're wanting me to come out there and do, you know, demos on what the book's about. So, like, whatever, we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So business writing, is it as flooded as our fiction world is right now, or once you have kind of established yourself a bit, is it do you get regular work as a freelancer? I mean, now what is your take on the freelance business writing and making a living at it?
I would say it's not flooded with writers that are skilled and knowledgeable and that understand like business basics, meeting the deadline, just being a reliable person. So I don't get the sense that it's quite flooded with that. There's a lot of interest in freelance business writing because it's, you can work from home and you don't need a boss. It's pretty interesting. A lot of people want to get paid to write, but I think there's people that are that really come at it as a business because you need to put yourself out there. You need to do a lot of marketing. You need to follow up on deadlines. And, it's a business, so it's not a it's not writing poems by the beach. Have to treat it like a business and have all the elements of business in place. But I think with that, I almost want to say more demand than ever because with the internet, there are a lot of new channels where, first a lot of new high tech products like software or software as a service, are different products that are made available through the internet, through the cloud, those need a lot of marketing because they're expensive products, they're complicated products. I think there's a lot of growth in this field. For someone who takes it seriously, for sure.
That's awesome. And we do have a question coming at you from the chat room. This is from actually somebody that's related to me. Courtney Zimmer asks, She wants to know what kind of topics that you, she missed the early part of the show a little bit, but what topics does Scott write about? And I think, yeah, she's wanting to get at maybe the topics that you most frequently write about as, you know, as a freelance business writer, and then maybe what are your favorite topics to write about within that group?
Let's see. Well, sorry, they all kind of group under the technology or training fields. I marked it into a bunch of different niches, and those were the ones that responded to me. So, but the last few pieces I've done are one on smart cities, like on technology used in and cities like handling basic city functions like traffic or policing or smart cities. And then I wrote one on for IBM about a new update on their software. That was pretty technical, but I interviewed one of their more senior level architects, and when he's, I guess to give you an idea of the value I provide, when these engineers are talking about their software, it's really geeky, and it's not in a way that their end audience can appreciate. So they need someone to kind of translate their really geeky talk into what the audience needs to know. So I did that piece on IBM software, a couple on data and trade shows. I've done quite a few about different aspects of data or big data or data analysis. A few on training for professional or actual training teams, what they need to know to carry out their work, training designers in the corporate environment. Does that answer your question, or does that give you an idea?
And we got a yes from the chat room. They said that answered their question. That's great. I'll just read a couple comments here in the chat room, just trying to catch up to it. Yeah, a couple comments about smart cities and things like that. Yeah, that's some stuff that really gets kind of meaty with even the fiction writers. The idea of smart cities and of course when getting the sci-fi writers, they can have a lot of fun with things like the Terminator, things like that. And so So some of the technologies that you're exploring definitely have a big presence and impact within the fiction world too, and that's gets into futurism and stuff like that. And I imagine that writing in the field that you do, you probably do get quite an interest in futurism. Let's take it there a little bit. Are there any, as far as the technologies that you like to explore and in terms of any movies or any books or anything like that, what are some ones that you think that are, pretty intriguing based on your, analysis of real technologies? What are some things in the entertainment world that you think are pretty, pretty accurate or pretty, you find interesting that where they've done it well as far as like futurism and things like that?
I don't watch too many movies so I'm not quite sure what's out there. I don't know. What came to mind is actually George Orwell's 1984, I think about that a lot when I'm watching a television. Mentally controlling people, but let's see. I don't know one, and the other thing that came to mind when you were saying that is this whole machine learning or this of artificial intelligence. It's not quite like in the movie where it's a robot that thinks on its own. HAL in 2001 or
right.
I think HAL was actually I think HAL actually killed people or like he was afraid that they were going to terminate him, so he he closed the door. Is that right? Or yeah, HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey. But this artificial, the way our artificial intelligence works now is that it can do it can like take a huge data set of like 2 million people and their and a bunch of facts about them, and it can go through and it can give you, or it can analyze the data in a way that a person can't. So it's not really its own conscious. It's not like a robot's conscious, but it can do, you know, it can really help us in our tasks. In attacking all this, like in a smart city, like all the data, like if a million cars are in a city or in a day, then that's a lot of data being generated at traffic lights and our different sensors, and it's impossible for humans to go through that and like look at patterns or try to find useful conclusions from that. So this artificial intelligence can help us with that. That's kind of a theme I've come across in a lot of different areas. How this artificial intelligence or machine learning is really becoming quite useful and practical, because all the data that's generated, like on smartphones or computers or different mm-hmm. devices. Does that kind of answer your question, or?
No, that's great, and you win bonus points for mentioning 1984. That's one of my all-time favorites and an influential one on me, along with Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. And actually, yeah, both were influential with me in my near future dream of the Navigator novel. So yeah, you definitely get bonus points for that mention. That does answer the question. And that's because it's something a lot of people are, you know, definitely have concerns of, you know, privacy issues, things like that. It's definitely a complex field, and it's definitely hard to project, but it's moving quick. You know, definitely, I mean, every time you turn around, something new is getting debuted, and I guess that's one of the exciting things, I guess, about being a business writer that, you know, covers technology and things like that, is that, yeah, things you got to keep on the edge, I imagine. And how tough is it to keep on the cutting edge? I mean, in a field that moves so quick.
Well, what I do is I basically I'm interviewing the actual experts, so I don't really need to I don't need to be on the forefront, but I need to be
mm-hmm.
I don't need to be an expert in the actual material, but I need to be an expert on writing the material. So how to actually take the information and present what's needed to the end audience. So, but I do try to keep one thing I use is Google Alerts. Like if you have a keyword that you're interested in, and you can set up a Google Alert, and every day it sends you any updates on that. That's something that's very useful. Are you familiar with Google Alerts, or?
Oh yes, yeah. I think we all use them. That's definitely one. Yeah, definitely we're familiar with. But that would be a good way of keeping up with what's coming out in a certain field. And I like that's almost like that's a good way of looking at it. You don't have to be an expert in the topic. You have to be an expert in how to write on the topic once you get the information from, you know, your subject. And that's I guess it makes the fields a little less daunting, I guess, to explore. Yeah, when you're talking about some of this stuff, because it definitely can get pretty wonky, I'm sure. Some of the emerging technologies, but that is Courtney says that she's up to my eyeballs in the medical world. Data she's in the medical industry, and that's definitely a data intensive industry, and also one with a lot of high tech kind of advancements as well. But it's exciting. Yeah, it sounds like you definitely get to be on the forefront of some pretty exciting stuff. And yeah, you speak Mandarin and all. And I was brings me to ask you, do you travel a lot for your work, or is that why you learned Mandarin, or is that, or do you have another reason for learning it?
Yes, I was in China for almost 3 years, and so I learned it just for practical reasons there. So I worked for a year in an international school in China, and then I started doing this, and I was staying in China at the time. So I learned
What part of China do you live in, if I can ask?
I stayed in Hangzhou for 1 year, which is in the middle, and then on the southeast in Fujian, near Taiwan. So I stayed there for about a year and a half.
Very good.
I went back and forth between, China's I think China's a pretty cool country. It's a lot of people, going back there.
That'd be an adventure.
Yeah,
I'm going to let Michael cut in here right now because I know he has to leave. We've got an obligation here coming up. So, Michael, did you have anything more you wanted to ask right before you head out?
No, it's been a fascinating conversation so far, and I really have enjoyed his insights.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating myself. Yeah, it's definitely a chance to explore some things we don't often get to explore on the show, which is one big reason why I'm excited to have you aboard here, Scott, and certainly like I said, we'll have to do a show in Mandarin sometime just for fun.
Mandarin and Japanese are two languages I've always wanted to learn. I've done a lot of research into both of them, especially for the types of books and the characters that I write. But it's not an easy language, that's for sure.
No, yeah. How hard was it for you to learn Mandarin with all of its nuances?
Well, in some ways, it's kind of simple compared to English or Spanish, or because there's no conjugations like. Like you don't say, I went, or I go, she goes, or you go, or you don't have to conjugate. It's just one word for go, and it's the same in the past tense or the future tense. So there's a lot less conjugation. I think the thing that's tricky is the tones. Like there's like ma 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 ma, or it's
right.
It's hard to hear.
Well, that's what I think would be the biggest challenge for a Westerner is the inflections being, it sounds to our ear, maybe that's the same, but over there they can tell, obviously vast differences in the meaning with something that, to us might sound ballpark the same, That'd be, in my opinion, that'd be one of the harder things to master coming from the West.
Do you speak any foreign languages or?
Oh, I took German in high school, and so I'm familiar with a little bit of that, and I mean to get into it more. But I've always been curious about, as Michael said, Chinese and Japanese specifically, and I definitely have talked at length with a friend of mine that's Vietnamese, and talked to him about just the way the inflections are also similar things there. And it's just like the way you pronounce something, it's just has a huge difference, and you can't get away with it like you can in the West with our words. I find that very interesting, and one of our chat room people has chimed in, and Kenzie Michaels, a great author, she's got a anthology where the cover is a Chinese elementary school, and one of the authors in her anthology was there last summer in an exchange program, so. We've got some folks in the chat room that have some connections with China as well. You're based in South Carolina, right?
Yes.
That's where you're based at right now. Yeah. And do you have to travel much for your writing side now, or do you pretty much get to stay on the home front in South Carolina?
No, it's entirely virtual, but I do get to travel, and I didn't mention, but I'm down in South America right now, but I've got a side hobby, I do a lot of traveling,
Very cool.
My base in South Carolina, I just use the computer to work, and just gotta stay professional,
So what type of cigar are you smoking right now?
Cigars, yeah. I knew you'd ask.
Yeah,
I knew he'd ask.
You're in South America.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, they send all the best cigars up to the U.S., so yeah, they don't. Yeah, it's not a good place for a cigar down here. So,
yeah, Daniel's our resident cigar expert here at the show. So, yeah, I'll let him cover this part with you.
Yeah, what kind of cigars do you like, Daniel? Or what?
Well, like I just got finished with a Punch Bare Knuckle Pita. If you have any idea what that is.
Not that specific. I've smoked punches before, but not that specific one, no.
Bare Knuckle's a little bit stronger. They came out with a new one called a Diablo, which if you like strong cigars, if you like full body, try one. Try the what they call the Stump. It's a small Bellicoso, and it'll blow you away on how much cigar you got in just 4.5 inches of stick.
Huh. Wow. All right.
Very cool. Well, on my side, though, the equation, though, I saw that you were, you know, you like good whiskeys, but we here in Kentucky, you know, we're bourbon country, and all bourbon is whiskey, not all whiskey is bourbon. So, of course, I'm going to ask you, about your favorite whiskeys real quick and see if any of them fall into our beloved bourbon category.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think I'm in a bit of trouble here because I didn't realize I didn't edit by LinkedIn, but I quit drinking about 6 months ago, so I've been sober for 6 months, and I don't know.
Okay, sorry about that.
But when I was drinking,
so
I decided to give my liver a rest. So, when I was drinking, I liked. I don't know. I can't think of what my favorite one. Actually, my favorite favorite
Blue.
Drink I've had was some. It was some moonshine I got in North Carolina. A friend that's a lawyer. He wasn't selling it. It's legal to you can make it and give it to your friends. He had some old moonshine.
Well, that's
from,
the real deal then. Yeah.
He kept it
yeah,
for about 30
years.
We
have that in Kentucky.
You got.
But I won't all offer right. that to you, knowing that you quit drinking. I won't get you in trouble there, but. Yeah, some very good friends of mine have been sober a long time now, and so I am conscious of that. But I just happened to see that in your bio, so I wanted to ask you that real quick. But my sister said, she'll take care of you. Make it to Imaginarium, we'll definitely. She says cigars, so I guess she'll definitely make sure you get some good cigars if you come visit us here for our convention in October.
Yeah, she's gonna come get them from me.
Yeah. And we've got. She did have a question though. I will ask that because we mainly get our questions in the chat room when we're not doing open lines. And she asked, how you get queried for jobs? Do you? And that's a good question. Do you query editors and publishers for your articles, or do they now? Are you at a point where they query you? That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to that point, but no, most of my work is I query it out. I send out pitches or letters of introduction, or depending on the mm-hmm. person. But yeah, it's mostly I'm trying to get more of that in depth, as they say. But as of now, no, it's mostly sending out query letters.
Yeah, because imagine though that it's like kind of our world. You know, once you develop relationships with editors or publications, it gets to a point where they'll start asking you sometimes, for projects or in our world, short stories or novels or whatever. But it's I'm sure that you've built a nice circle of some of the ones you mentioned in your bio and so forth, that groups that you regularly write for. That that's got to help a little bit.
In the fiction world, when you send out a pitch, do you do you already have the book in, or I understand that's what you have to do. Is that correct? Or
most
pretty
of the time,
much.
Yes. Yeah, most of the time. There is sometimes, I mean, you have to be ready with the full book if they ask you to send it in. So, in other words, you could, you know, in theory, send a query out or a couple chapters out, but if they actually respond and say, yeah, I like it, send the rest, you better be ready to do it. And so, in other words, it's best to always have the material ready rather than having to scramble because you got them interested. So that's it's my advice from my end to writers to always have all the material ready before you query. But that's the fiction world, and that's different than maybe outlining a concept for an interview. You know, a technology expert or a business article, you know, may be very different in your world. So I don't know. I mean, that's definitely your field. So, which is interesting to me because we do have guests at Imaginarium that are, you know, strictly, you know, nonfiction journalist types and they, you know, kind of do what you do. You know, they make their living off of articles and columns and things like that. And that's it's a fascinating world. It is. And I was going to bring up too in our conversation, you know, something I noticed with news media. There's a lot of alternative, that's not the right word, independent media that has cropped up online, you know, on very well presented sites, you know, some that are able to raise some money, whether through crowdfunding or subscriptions or donations. But I imagine that there are a lot more opportunities with the proliferation of sites that are independent in nature for people like you, I assume, to get some paid work.
I'm not sure if you have an example
media.
In mind. Or,
Yeah, because like main media, but they're established publication. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, I mean, that's obviously a market. But, yeah, there's definitely, I'm sure there's a lot of new sites that, you know, offer some opportunity for you that are, you know, pretty much crop up out of nowhere. And, and certainly probably have a need for content. But that's, do you approach many, do you try to approach like independent media like that, or do you pretty much stick to established markets?
Yeah, as you said that, I was kind of going through my qualification process, like when I'm looking at a prospective client, and I thought they probably don't have a lot of money to spend on content. It doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like a market I would really go after just on the basis of that, because the ones I'm looking for, they're more, they've either got a really expensive product they're selling, and I can see they've already got, they're putting a lot of money into content already, or mm-hmm. they're a publication that's obviously doing really well, I guess a lot of publications have gotten hit by the internet and by the changes in the economy. So the ones that have figured out how to survive and thrive, I can kind of see those. So I'm really looking for the ones that they've got a sound business model, and that's the ones that can pay a writer well. So
right.
And so if that makes sense. So just from my process of qualifying clients, a newer site that maybe doesn't have a really stable revenue model. It could be good for a clip, but it's probably not going to be a good paying market. Does that answer your question? Or
that's
how I would think about that. So,
are you on LinkedIn?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. That's where Holly met him, actually, was on LinkedIn. And
okay.
Yeah, she told me.
I didn't know that he knew Mitchell Levy or not. Mitchell is the aha guy. We've had him on the Star Chamber with us before.
Yeah, do you happen to know Mitchell, Scott?
I don't know. No, I don't know him. I made a note to check him out afterwards, but
Yeah, he's in the business sphere as well.
Yeah, he.
But
his thing is we create best-selling books for thought leaders. You know, mm-hmm. that's what he basically does is, you know, like for the CEOs and different people like that of the companies, which sort of sounds like some of the stuff that you're doing, but you're doing it with more technical aspirations to it. So.
So he like writes the books or.
Yeah, he's one of the authors and everything for books and everything for like the thought leaders of the companies and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it because I mean, yes, what Scott is doing is, he's picking thought leaders as well when he's picking an expert or someone on the cutting edge or something. I mean, yeah, it's definitely folding in that concept of thought leaders. I mean, that fits perfectly actually. So that's a very, very cool. Very cool. Some good stuff here, Scott. This is, yeah, they said, chat room says interesting topic. Yeah. So they're liking what you have to say tonight, Scott, but
great. Well,
that's a, well, we don't always get a chance to talk to somebody that's in your field. You know, we talk to a variety of creatives and people like that. But, yeah, we don't often get, somebody that's, definitely focused, in the technology field. And that's really, really a cool opportunity for us, too, tonight. And so that's
I'm pretty much ex-technology field. I was electrical engineer and stuff in a previous lifetime, so. Before an game career.
Well, your favorite technology does not involve much electricity. It's Victorian here. A lot of gears and steam.
Tesla, brought us in. Tesla, that old boy named Edison, Mr. Westinghouse, helped us out a whole lot.
That's true. Oh man, we love to razz Daniel a little bit. It's fun. It's always fun. But yeah, he's definitely our Victorian era expert. So, but that's good to hear that there is a very solid market though for the freelance world because the fiction side of the publishing world is definitely a bit of a mess right now, but it's mainly due to oversaturation. That's the biggest problem.
Of some good and some not so good.
Yeah, access is good, but oversaturation. And I'm just trying to look. Yeah, several more chats come in. What's that now?
I was wondering, do you sell your books through Amazon or through like a site or bookstores or I don't know what's really active, the biggest
part of the market is definitely ebooks right now, and Amazon is the by far the biggest market for ebooks. And so I would definitely say Amazon's the epicenter. But there's still actually print books have made a bit of a comeback. Yeah, in the recent months and last year or so, and so, yes, there's still a viable market with print. It's changing. It's not as much chains and big box stores. It's more independent bookstores are the ones that are I think doing better. But as far as ebooks go, Amazon is definitely the big one, and then Nook is still around, iTunes, Kobo in Australia and Canada, especially, and some other markets, Draft Digital, Smashwords. So, usually in our world, we deal with a ton of different outlets and distribution options. It can get pretty messy.
Or you can always go to Seven Star Press and buy them too. So.
Well, yeah. Right. So it's, yeah, that's the press we're all a part of. So, but it's an adventure, the modern publishing world. And then you have audiobooks, which we were talking about a little bit before you came on. You know, the audiobook market is I think really emerging. You know, it's really growing. And then it's also not as saturated, so it's a little bit easier for you to market in without getting just swamped.
Interesting.
So,
audiobooks. When you were talking about when you were talking, it reminded me.
Go ahead, Scott.
I have met a couple of writers in my work that they're the only ones that I've met that work in fiction, but they both write romance novels for women. So apparently that's a big good. I know they do quite well,
Yes. Mackenzie Michaels in our chat room right now is actually a successful romance author, and romance is, in my opinion, I mean it's. Definitely, the I would say the biggest genre sales wise, and it definitely is the one that is doing the best, I think, right now. Mystery thrillers are up there, but yeah, romance hands down is definitely the one that has the greatest strength. So it's a good place to be if you're that type of writer.
Daniel, you said, is an expert on the Victorian
he
age.
Daniel writes in the Victorian era. He writes Jack the Ripper tales on the fiction side, and then, like he said earlier, he's got a catch-up book because he actually is a Victorian chef who had a full bistro and everything. So he's an expert in Victorian cuisine. But he's back online. Yeah, he dropped the call for a second there, but he's back.
Yeah, I got kicked off for some reason. All of a sudden, the phone went dead.
But go ahead and tell him about your background a little bit, because that's kind of fun. I think he'd get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I was an electrical engineer, maintenance manager for companies for about 23 years before NAFTA came through. If you remember that little debacle. And after that happened and everything, I spent almost a year trying to get another job. Got another job and everything as a maintenance manager for another company. 2 months after I got there, they sold out to another group of investors. So the headhunter actually made more money through them than I did. And I was making about six figures at the time. and then NAFTA came through, a little while after that, and the government, NAFTA had come through before then, and the government came back a little while later and said, considering the government program put you out of work, we'll let you go back to school. Well, I went back to culinary school at 40 years of age, and, wound up opening up a bistro and stuff, and had a stroke one day. And had to give up my bistro and stuff. So, and then I became an author after that. After failing English 101 three times in college, figured nobody'd ever want to read my dribble. But this last year, year ago, had a book put out and everything. And then this last year, I was awarded the Poison Cup Award for the best new author by the Crime Masters of America.
Yeah, which is
wild.
Very
for me.
Cool. Very cool stuff. Yeah. Debut author and wins an award right away. So that's fantastic. But yeah, it doesn't. Always work out that well for most authors. Yeah, he definitely had a good one there. And he's got, yeah, but Daniel's, yeah, got a real good foundation for Victorian era stuff. And if you do get a chance to meet us, you'll see that right away, because he dresses the part too. So,
well, I dress like me, is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't understand that, but you know, after the stroke and everything, it was one of those type of things where I looked at, you know, what are some things that I can reduce the number of decisions that I've got to make in a day, and be able to use that brain power on other things. Well, what I'm going to wear that day is, you look in your closet and you've got blue shirts and white shirts and green shirts and pink shirts and whatever else, and different color pants and all that stuff. Well, my closet, I have black pants, black shirts, black vest, black coats. It reduces no matter what I pull out, they all match.
Makes it easy. Well, we'll have to get to all of you. If Scott can never make it to Imaginarium, we'll definitely have to have the two of you giving a panel on cigars and talking about stuff like this. Definitely fascinating. Definitely fascinating. Oh man. But we are we're coming up on about 3.5 minutes left in the show, and one thing we want to make sure that we do it for all of our guests, and that's if you have any specific social media or websites that you would like to give out to let listeners find you or connect with you, go ahead and tell us what those are.
ScottMcKinneyWriter.com. So just my name, writer.com. And
just straight through ScottMcKinneyWriter.com. Okay.
Yes. And that connects. You can connect with me on LinkedIn from there, or send an email. I'm certainly glad to. If you're interested in this and doing writing on the more business side, I'm definitely glad to answer any questions I can, or refer you to some books or more information, I don't know. Also, if you know any, software companies or sort of B2B companies that are, I don't know, looking for some marketing help, I definitely always welcome referrals. Or you can refer them to my website. Thank you, and thank you so much for welcoming me on your show, Michael and Daniel. Is there any last thing? Do any of the listeners have any last questions or anything I can help with?
Well, I will check with that. Courtney says, the show is great. She says, great aesthetic with a reason. So, yeah, that's a cool phrase, actually. That's pretty cool there. Yeah, I know the chat room's been enjoying your show tonight for sure. And we definitely have had a blast talking to you. It's been a fun subject for me to explore. I love it. Yeah, we do get somebody that's involved in B2B, business to business, and it's definitely a great thing to be also talk freelance too, because that's an area that I know a lot of writers are interested in, even the fiction writers we deal with. And you're getting thanks for coming aboard. Filmmaker Thomas Moore enjoyed it. Thanks for coming. Yeah, ditto. Yeah, they've
great.
You're a hit, Scott.
Great.
You get free cigars out
awesome.
Of all these
Thank
people.
You.
Yeah, if you come to Kentucky,
awesome.
You'll get free cigars at everyone. So, but
bourbon, but free cigars.
Well, we won't cause any trouble. We're respectful here in the Bluegrass State, but yes, we will take care of you on the other front. getting any last comments, Scott, before we get off? It's about a minute left.
Well, I think if you're what comes to mind is if you're wanting to make a career out of writing, I can definitely suggest looking at the nonfiction side, like How To or doing working for businesses like I do. But I guess if you want to write in your dream like Stephen King or Michael Crichton, all the make that work and become the next famous author. So
very cool. Well, thanks a lot for coming aboard, Scott.
Do you think that one of those is separate from the other?
The Michael Crichton and Stephen King, or I'm sorry, which do you mean is different?
What I'm saying is, you said do this or that, there's. But with what we were talking about earlier, I write fiction, but I also write nonfiction. And you can become, famous for both of them, can't you?
I was just saying that. If that's your dream, I can get that. I guess you could become famous in both, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I've just found what's paid. I don't know what pays my bills is in the business side, and I find it interesting. So that works well for
right.
me, and it gets my creative juices flowing. But
have you ever thought about writing a nonfiction book or a fiction book?
Yes, I have, and I was wanting to ask, what process you go to. I would be very interested to know the process you go through. If you can, how you envision a plot, and I don't know if you, I don't know if on any of your podcasts you explain the process you go through, but I would be very interested in that.
Give them a little bit, Stephen.
Well, I mean, the process for every single writer is different. I mean, for sure. I mean, that's something. I mean, you ask 10 best-selling authors what their process is, you'll get 10 different answers. And so it's a matter of finding what's best for you. And, if you're, a meticulous outliner, or if you're a person that likes to leave space for improvising and things like that, I mean, you know, that will affect, how much pre-outlining you do for a potential novel. I'm kind of a hybrid. I like to have a basic structure of what I'm going to do in a novel, but I also want to leave room for things that come up during the process, which, new characters, new ideas, new things. And so I leave room to maneuver, as I call it. And so I'm kind of a hybrid between outlining and improvising, and there's other people all over that spectrum. And so there is no, in my opinion, right answer for process on novel writing. My only thing that I would say is write often is more important than write a lot in one session. It's better, I think, to write a few hundred words a day, every day or every other day, than it is to write 5,000 words in one day and then not write for 3 more weeks. I think you have to kind of keep yourself in the mindset and the zone by writing on a regular basis. I think that is the most important thing for doing a long format type project like novel writing. But that would be my basic answer.
How long is your normal book that you write, Scott?
Or articles,
articles, though, 1,000 words, 1,500 words, short, a couple pages in a magazine, so.
Sounds about right.
But like when you're doing a technical for a company or something like that, how long are those?
Nothing a book length. I've never written anything book length. But just a couple pages.
Okay.
I haven't done any longer work.
That's what I guess with the online market. Yeah, there'd be about 1,000 to 1,500 words somewhere in that ballpark for the online publications for sure. But that's Yeah, you'd be able to do whatever you want. I mean, you're definitely you definitely could do a fiction novel if you ever get the itch. It would not be hard for you with the kind of mindset you have.
You know, especially with all the technology that you've looked at. You know, if you're doing a sci-fi or something like that, that you could you know bring a lot of that stuff into.
Oh yeah.
You know, you already have the knowledge there. You've already researched it, so it's not like you've got to sit there and.
We come full circle. Scott early on talks to us on the Star Chamber show about taking the research you do as a fiction writer to do nonfiction, and here we are at the end of the show telling Scott to take the ideas that he has from the nonfiction world to write fiction. So I think we have just made a complete circle. Congratulations,
yep.
Gentlemen.
Great.
That is a perfect note. Perfect note to end the show on. Oh my God, that is awesome. But thank you for joining us, Scott. And we will definitely want to keep in touch with you. And I can't wait to
Facebook or
yep.
LinkedIn or Twitter, any of those. And
yeah,
know.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we want to keep in touch with you.
I'd like to meet y'all in person. That would be great. All right.
In the meantime, enjoy those cigars, and we will definitely be following up with you. And as far as our audience, next week, 9 p.m. Eastern, we will have another episode of the Star Chamber Show. Good night, everybody, and thank you for listening to tonight's show featuring Scott McKinney. Night, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you all.